April 1st, about 2 o'clock. We have before us today House Bill 44 and House Bill 46. We're going to start with 44. That's a act related to motor vehicle liability insurance and motor vehicle registration. We had some testimony on it the other day. I think we have four amendments, minimum of four amendments before us. And I guess, first of all, is there anybody here to offer any more testimony on House Bill 44?
I signed up, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Come on. We have two. Donna, did you want to talk to? Okay.
I'll yield to Donna any day.
You go right
ahead. Okay. Well, we'll start with the seniority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, I'll be brief indeed. For the record, my name is Bob Ziegler, and I'm representing the Alaska Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers. They have a suggestion or two, which hopefully will appeal to the committee, and I will be brief, I assure you. On page 1, line 21, there's a requirement that the owner of a vehicle to certify to the department the existence of motor vehicle liability insurance. My clients feel that the word certify is vague, and they suggest deleting the words certify to the department and inserting in lieu thereof, in quotes, sign a sworn affidavit to the department verifying. And if the committee would favorably look upon that proposed change, then in line 23, the word certify should be changed to verify. We also understand that there may be consideration of an amendment to require proof of insurance up front in the form of a binder or possibly a copy of the policy. My clients feel very strongly that such an amendment would place a truly monumental paperwork burden on the members of the association or the corporation. The Department of Public Safety earlier testified before the House Labor and Commerce Committee to the effect that there are approximately 450,000 vehicles registered in the state. In addition, there are also an unknown number of resales each year, which would require proof of insurance when the vehicle is re-registered. In light of the current economic situation in Alaska, the extra expense incurred by the local agents and brokers would indeed be devastating. And I haven't seen that proposed amendment that they're referring to here, but I assume there is one flapping around someplace. You can tell me, Mr. Chairman, if there is.
Yeah, I don't know if there's one here that says that or not.
Okay. Well, the main thrust right now, though, is to do away with the certify to the department in lieu thereof the language I gave you. Sign a sworn affidavit to the department verifying. That's all I have.
Okay.
Don't ask me any questions because I'm not all that knowledgeable. I yield to Mr. Coker.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, sir.
No, Representative Grunberg's with us here.
Thank you.
Next, we have Donna Walker.
Chairman Sine, members of the House Judicial Committee, I'm Donna Walker. I represent Allstate and State Farm Insurance Companies, and they have several recommendations that they feel would help keep the cost of this bill down to the insurance companies and ultimately to the policyholders. Our clients would prefer the self-certification procedure to the requirement of proof. And if the proof standard is incorporated, we would urge that proof be defined so that it would be inclusive of something that the insurers are already issuing rather than having to come up with some new form that the companies would have to issue to each insured. And perhaps I think Representative Donnelly stated a few things, a copy of the policy, policy number or binder. If it could be one of any of those things, if we could get a definition that would incorporate something that is already issued to the policyholders, we would prefer that. And at the end of your session on Monday, there was discussion about reincorporating the notice of cancellation requirement, and we would urge that this not be reincorporated for several reasons. The expense to the insurer, which will ultimately be passed on to the policyholders, and the administrative nightmare and burden that it creates.
Any questions, Don? Representative Taylor?
Yeah.
I believe she is referring to your amendment there, or your concept anyway.
My concept, the question of notification. On cancellation, isn't each company required by the terms of its policy to give notice in writing to that person that has the policy?
right to the insured.
Right. So as a consequence, the horrendous burden you're talking about is that you would make a duplicate of that notice of cancellation, and that would be sent to our Department of Public Safety.
Right. Thousands of duplicates.
Well, only when you canceled someone, and you're required by your terms, you said, to send them one anyhow, all you'd have to do would be, and you could even bunch them. You could probably send them once a month or once a week or whatever to the state, notifying, what we're talking about is a duplicate copy, a tear-off sheet. Right.
Well, I don't have the statistics on that with me today, but I think they show that of the thousands of notices of cancellation that go out each year, it's a figure of like less than 10% that actually get canceled. So part of the burden is this crossing in the mail of notices and payments, and that's going to require additional notices going out. And
well, that's because you have a time lag. You send out a notice, basically it prompts payment, doesn't it? Notice of cancellation.
You mean prior to the actual cancellation?
Yeah, you send it out prior to actual cancellation. People receive that and go, oh my gosh, I got to pay my insurance policy. And then they actually send the money in, and the policy, it isn't a matter of cancellation and reinstatement of the policy. It's merely a matter of you sent out the first notice, you got paid, the policy remains in force for most of them.
But you've already sent your notice of cancellation to the department.
No, you wouldn't.
I
can probably invent ways, too, that can make this thing sound absolutely terrible, you know. But if I want to accomplish the purpose, I think I can find some very simple ways to do it. In other words, why don't we just have you wait until the policy has been actually canceled and then send us notice of it? Not the 30-day previous or 60-day previous notice that you send to the insured saying, if you don't pay us, we are going to cancel on this date. Instead, why don't you wait till you've canceled it and then send us that notification? Then we're only talking 10% of them, aren't we? According to your testimony.
I think that would certainly be a much preferred route to go, but I would ask also that I be allowed to come back to you with statistics of how many of those who are actually canceled it are almost immediately reinstated because the prompt payment comes in once it is canceled.
Now, you see, we don't want uninsured motorists to have a set of plates and be driving their vehicle on our highway. Now, we're not going to know that if we don't know you've canceled one. We need to have a way of working that out. And if you could suggest some language that might help us on the question of actual notification or actual cancellation, as opposed to the kind of warning. Because I certainly don't wish to impose, Mr. Chairman, any burden upon the industry, but merely to ask the industry to facilitate us in carrying out this state policy.
Okay, Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You represent State Farm and Allstate. Are there statistics available that you could provide to us on, well, let's say somebody has a car accident or you insure their home, for example, and they have a minor claim or even a large claim against your company? How quickly after that claim is satisfied does either Allstate or State Farm cancel the policies on those particular claims? Do you have statistics on that?
I'd be happy to. I don't have them offhand.
I'd be happy to
inquire.
Yeah.
I mean, just because there's been a claim, maybe
they
cancel.
I'd be interested in having that
if you get it. Any other questions? I didn't have an answer to where we might insert that
notification
language.
I think the notification language was in the original bill. And I think we have the fiscal note that comes with that language. It's about $660,000 or something like that. So, and that's on the department side, not the fiscal impact on the company side.
Could I see that?
Yeah. So, Representative Taylor.
Yeah, the original bill talked about cancellation within, notify the department within 10 days after cancellation of any policy that had been issued within the preceding 6 months.
Can I explain?
Representative Donnelly?
Just real quickly, in the 1983 draft that was passed by the House, we went round and round with this. We finally decided that a six-month limit was a real good idea because it cut down a lot of the unnecessary paperwork. Because 6 months is what a lot of the policies run to. So if somebody just renews after 6 months, they wouldn't be fall under that provision, so you wouldn't have to do it every time a policy was renewed or every time somebody changed insurance companies after the normal six-month premium. So that's what the six-month language was.
It was a concession to the industry, so they wouldn't have to do that. And then you're only talking about actual cancellations and only notification 10 days after the actual cancellation, not the warning letter.
Well, I guess I have a question. A cancellation would include switching insurance companies. I mean, if you were one company and had a policy and a person just decided to go to another company and just let that policy go, that company there would have to notify the department of the cancellation, even though the person had picked up coverage from another company, right? I mean, that would be a cancellation somehow under the language. This argument is beginning to come back to me.
I guess my concern there, Mr. Chairman, is that the fiscal note attached by the department, of course, Donna can't testify to that, but
yeah,
it just seems astronomical compared to the number of actual notifications they'd be receiving here is about 10%, she said, of what the business is.
Okay, perhaps we could do it this way. If
that's
we get the testimony from Donna over with, and then we have some amendments to take up, and Representative Taylor, perhaps if you want to make that as an amendment, we have the Division of Motor Vehicles here, and you could question their fiscal note at that time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gruenberg.
Do we have somewhere in this paperwork what that fiscal note would be?
Yes. Representative Donnelly has it.
Do we have, is this something that I would have anyway?
I don't know.
Probably not. We'll get some copies of it.
Yeah, I would appreciate it.
At least the face sheet anyway.
It's about 8-page fiscal note.
I know. We'll cover that.
There's a cover sheet on
it. Okay, any other questions of Ms. Walker? Not, thank you very much. Is anybody else here to testify on House Bill 44? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll note that the Division of Insurance, Don Coates and John Jordan are here with us to provide information. Representative Donnelly, if you want to join us at the end of the table, we can start with your amendment, amendment number one by Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll make it by Sund if you need someone on the committee to make the amendment. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that.
Let's proceed.
After we produced the Labor and Commerce version, we had some disagreement with the drafters about what certify meant. We all along intended, the Labor and Commerce Committee intended it to mean provide proof, a copy of the policy, a policy number, a binder of some sort to the Division of Motor Vehicles. So envision the person coming in to register their motor vehicle, showing a copy of their insurance policy, or sometimes insurance companies issue cards or something already to their insured. And so amendment number one simply makes it clear that you have to provide proof as opposed to simply signing a form swearing that you do have insurance.
I thought that there was testimony from Mr. Ziegler earlier of different language in that, just for Representative Gruenberg's point, that on line 21, after the citation to the statute where it says certified to the department, there's a recommendation to delete that and replace with sign a sworn affidavit verifying. So,
Mr. Chairman, we considered that option in Labor and Commerce, and we eventually rejected it as being not as effective as providing proof that there was an actual policy.
Okay, Representative Gruenberg.
This is a technical suggestion.
That's correct.
Certifying something does not mean providing proof. I don't think that that's how it would be read by the ordinary person. If you want to say provide proof, then that's the term you should use.
That's the amendment.
Okay, that's the Donnelly's amendment is to retake certify out and put provide proof in.
Okay, my question is, I thought somebody said that there was some advantage to certifying, and what I was wondering is whether you should say certify and provide.
That was the
I think that's
insurance.
I don't remember who said that.
Mr. Cole.
Okay, the other question that's come up is provide proof. Is proof a definable enough issue or number? Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand, I think, what Mr. Ziegler is saying. I don't know that I feel it's important to have it under oath, but I don't have a problem with that, but I think that they should be both, because I don't recall exactly the reason given by the department, but I remember there was a reason. Maybe could we ask Mr. Koch, what was the reason again for the
oath?
Is that okay?
Yeah, just identify yourself.
Yeah, I'm Don Koch with the Division of Insurance, and I guess the reason was given as an example. You may have a copy, you may have your policy in hand, and go down to motor vehicles and say, here's my policy or my card or whatever it is. And that document may already have been canceled, and there's not going to be any evidence on that document that fact, it has been changed. We testified that certified would come in a stronger expression because you would have to have the person actually certified to sign an affidavit that he had insurance in force at that point.
Would you have a problem in having it under oath?
No, I don't have a problem with Mr. Ziegler's statement.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if I could make an amendment to the amendment.
Why don't you just throw your idea on the table here? Okay, I'll withdraw this amendment.
No, it's fine. It's just a little change. Okay. It would say, you would not delete certify. You would say certify under oath to the department and provide and produce and provide proof of the existence.
I got no problem with that. That fits in very well, Mr. Chairman, because later on we do ask that they certify that they will maintain that insurance, so the same form could be used for both.
May I
again repeat the language, please?
After the word certify on line 21, my amendment to the amendment would state, adding the words under oath. And then the amendment said delete certify, so we're not deleting certify. We're adding, instead of deleting certify, we'll strike that phrase, and we're saying after certify, insert the phrase under oath. And then... yeah, okay, I'm sorry, you're right. It should be... may I make my own amendment? I think maybe that's
easier. Yeah, I'll withdraw amendment number one.
Okay, the amendment should be, after the word certify, it would add the phrase, under oath, and provide proof. That phrase to go into the department of, and add the word of after the word department. So the line, Mr. Chairman, would read... page 1, line 21, AS 28.22.200, comma, certify under oath and provide proof to the department of the existence of a motor, if that would be agreed with.
Fine, just fine.
Question on the amendment?
I'm just trying to read the rest of that sentence and see if it, the next certify in line 23 is still valid then.
Yeah, and if we want to do anything with that, that should be a separate.
Well, you need to say something about under oath.
No, because you can't certify that you're going to do something. You can only certify a fact. And you can only have under oath.
Maybe you verify it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Barnes.
Thank you. I have a question to whomever might be able to answer. This under oath, does that mean that every time someone is going to go down to get their license that they... have to stand there in front of the little girl and stick up their paw and say,
I swear. The form would, if I may, Mr. Chairman, we have the Uniform Acknowledgements Act, and all that requires is that you say, certify under penalty of perjury.
Okay.
I don't even think that has to be notarized. I think as long as you say it's under penalty of perjury.
Yeah, I was going to hope we keep the notaries out of this.
Right.
John, if you look at ASO 963, or give that to me, then we'll...
Representative Taylor?
Yeah, there was an additional amendment that had been suggested by Don Cope, but I don't want to further confuse this one if there's any controversy on it. If not, I would merely add it to it, but let's go ahead and get this amendment.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay, hearing none, we've adopted.
The next one, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cope had suggested on line 23, striking the word the, I think it's the struck mine too good, add the letter... word A, and then between the words liability and policy, insert the word insurance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, while that's on the table, is the word certify the right word in line 23?
I think it is.
Okay. Is there any objection to the amendment by Mr. Taylor then to strike the word the after certify that, insert A, and after liability, insert insurance? Okay, hearing none, that's adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grunberg.
The Uniform Acknowledgements Act, AS 09, Uniform Recognition of Acknowledgements Act, 0963-020, simply requires that it be under penalty of perjury, and that it shall state that the date and place of execution, the fact that a notary public or other official empowered to administer oaths is unavailable, and the following: I certify the penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true. And then if you do that, then you're guilty of perjury. Otherwise, it has, if there's one that's available, you just have to get it notarized.
I think that's a problem there. I think it's hard to claim that it's unavailable in a major city. I think we did that for the Bush areas, where you'd be in a community where there is no post office, no postmaster, and no notary available.
In essence, Mr. Chairman, it's what we're doing on fish and game licenses, as an example.
Right.
You certify or verify at the bottom of your fish and game license that you, in fact, are a resident and have been for over 1 year. If, in fact, that is a misstatement, then it's subject to prosecution for violation of this
act.
I
think we're underneath that scenario there rather than this uniform acknowledgement.
Yeah, there's a,
I do, too.
There's another one that's unsworn falsification.
Right.
And right. I'll find that if we just give me a moment here.
We move on to the next.
The criminal penalty than you are under this one, actually.
Yeah. Right. But I would accept that.
Okay, let's go on to amendment number 2. And on behalf of Mr. Donnelly, I'll move amendment number 2 at page 1, line 24.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment would address the difficulty raised when someone had vehicles that were not required to be registered or were not on the being utilized on public highways, which is the whole policy reason we're doing this, is try to get liability insurance for those type of vehicles.
Okay, the amendment is on page 1, line 24. After registered, insert, and being driven on a highway, vehicular way, or area. Representative Taylor.
Yeah, I thought that, I've seen that phrase used a lot of times, I thought the word public was normally inserted before the word area. Otherwise, I don't know what area means.
Parking lot.
Yeah, if it's a parking lot available to the public, it's one thing. If I got a chain link fence around it and I'm using nothing but parking DA cats in there, it's not necessarily open to the public.
I'll want to go back to my First Amendment and change it. But okay. Let's wait till we finish this.
We'll
I'm
wait
sorry.
Till we get through this.
And highway, I don't know. Is highway defined as something that's a public highway?
Well, highway is defined at another point in this mandatory statute as a road with a count of less than of over 499, I think.
Oh. I think I was just correcting this.
Okay. Is there an area? Is area defined too?
The Title 28.41.10, subsection 19, under 28.41.100, I guess, definitions. A vehicular way or area that needs a path, way, area other than a highway or private property, which is designated by official traffic control devices or customary usage, which is open to the public for purposes of pedestrians. This area may be restricted in use to pedestrians, bicycles, or other specific types of vehicles as provided by the Department of the Agency. I don't think we need the word public.
I think we can leave it as is if it's defined. I think we'd be confusing. Okay, is there any objection to the motion? Okay, hearing none, adopted.
May we go back to number 1? The very first one, the one that I offered.
Okay, why don't we roll through 3 here? I think this is a very non-controversial one here. Amendment number 3, and I'll move the amendments. This is an amendment to page 4, line 25. It takes out the quote words for the future. It's kind of the definition here. The amendment is written a little bit peculiar, but it's those words for the future are in the existing statute, so to delete them we need just to capitalize them and put brackets around it, and that's what this one page amendment accomplishes. So, and then on page 5, line 12, in the definitional or the section of proof of financial responsibility, the words for the future are also deleted there. Moved amendment. Representative Donnelly, is there any objection to that amendment? Okay, that's adopted then. Okay, Representative Grunberg, you want to?
Yeah, calling my earlier amendment number 1, as substituted. I move we rescind that because I have a new, I think, what you want to do better.
Okay. Motion to rescind amendment number 1. Any objection? Hearing none, rescinded.
And may I offer at this point orally a revised amendment number 1?
Why don't you call it amendment number 4?
Amendment number 4. Okay. And this would be looking at line 21. After the word department, add the phrase page 1, line 21, after the word department and before the word the, add the phrase, and provide proof of. And what that would do would be that the certification would be an unsworn certification, and the violation would be a violation of AS 11.56.210, unsworn falsification, which states in subsection A, a person commits the crime of unsworn falsification if, comma, with the intent to mislead a public servant in the performance of a duty, comma, the person submits a false written or recorded statement, which the person does not believe to be true, one, in an application for a benefit, or two, on a form bearing notice, authorized by law, that false statements made in it are punishable. Subsection B says, unsworn falsification is a Class A misdemeanor. And I would ask the staff, as part of this amendment, to check with the drafter and see whether we would have to put in that the form should state that the false statement would be punishable as unsworn falsification. And so that I'm sort of making that portion of it conceptual. I don't know if that's necessary. If it is, it should be put in there.
Okay, I just want to understand the amendment. Line 21, after department, we're adding and provide proof of?
Yes, with the understanding that the word certify would meet the requirements of AS 11.56.210. If it doesn't, then just adding minor language to make sure that statute is compliant.
Representative Taylor?
Yeah, I think all staff would have to do would be put in the little brackets that say in compliance with Alaska Statute 11.56.210.
Okay.
Whatever they need.
Any objection to the amendment?
No.
Great. Hearing none, amendment's adopted, and we will check on the certification. Okay. Representative, do you have any further amendments? Okay, I have amendment number, I guess we're on number 5 now. And it looks like this.
I don't see
Mr.
it.
Mr. Chairman, amendment number 5 is proposed by the Division of Insurance. Right. It's simply a housekeeping matter that moves where the requirement would be lifted from right. Title 21, I believe, to Title 28 or vice versa. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes no substantive change.
Okay, just a note. It's on page 5, lines 17 to 21, is now section 9 in the bill. And what this amendment does is move that identical language, near identical language, from Title 28 into Title 21. And Title 21 is the statute where the insurance companies look to write insurance contracts so that when they go out to say what do you have to provide in your insurance contract to write a contract in Alaska, this is where they look, and this is where they would find this section. And the rest of the amendment is conforming language to get everything working right. And I would note the substantive change is we have changed the word motor vehicle to the word automobile. Mm-hmm. And that is an attempt to get farm tractors out of this. Automobile is defined someplace, and motor vehicle is a little different. So, and the rest of the page is just conforming amendments in the bill to make it run right. Is there any objection to the amendment? Representative Donnelly, you have no objection?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, that's adopted. Okay. Any further amendments people want to make to this bill?
Just a...
Hearing none.
Wait a minute.
Representative
May I just
Grunberg and then Taylor.
Just for simplicity's sake, I'm not sure we have a number right. I thought the Taylor amendment might have been number 1. And then the Donnelly, Donnelly 2, 3, yes, 4, this is 5. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think we're okay on that.
I think so.
Okay.
Hartle's the only one who has to understand that.
Sure.
If
he can understand anything, we're doing here tomorrow.
Peggy has to figure it out, too.
Right.
So, okay, Representative Taylor.
Yes, my amendment is to add a new section, to section 2810.115, notification of cancellation. An insurer shall notify the department within 10 days after the cancellation of a motor vehicle. I suppose that would probably be an automobile now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Automobile liability policy issued by the insurer within the preceding 6 months for a vehicle that is registered under this chapter.
Okay, we have staff handing out the amendment.
You just have to change that one word, motor vehicle or automobile.
I don't know if that change is necessary, Mr. Chairman, because it seems like in different parts of the statute they refer to them differently.
Yeah, leave it the way it is.
Okay.
Okay, we have...
It's not necessary.
I'll leave it the way it is, a motor vehicle.
Okay, and staff's passing out that, plus the cover page on an 8-page fiscal note. We have Department of Motor Vehicles here, Mr. Brown, to testify on that. Maybe you want to join us there, Bill?
While he's doing that, could I look at the back 7 pages?
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody, Mark, maybe you can make copies of the back 7 pages. Yeah,
if you want to look at it.
Okay,
the motion's on the table. I'll object. Yes, amendment number 6.
Do I understand that this fiscal note is related specifically to this amendment, or is this...
I think it's more than that.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Brown, Division of Motor Vehicles. Basically, the fiscal note that was just passed out was the original House Bill 44, which basically you've covered today in all your amendments. Part of that fiscal note was for the amendment number 1, where you've inserted provide proof rather than letting the person certify at the time that they get the registration. If they are to provide proof, actually bring in their policy or something of that nature, we feel it will take longer to process the applications. There will be more rejections at the time of the mail-in because they won't send in the proper form. This is mainly as a result of the experience of the emission inspection program in Anchorage and Fairbanks, where there was a good educational program ahead of time. The information sent out to the people tells them they have to send in the emission inspections. At the time they send in the renewal by mail, and they still don't do it, and we send a lot of the registrations back. We feel we'll solve the same problem in regards to providing proof at the time of registration. We basically oppose the providing proof at time of registration. We would like to see it similar to the amendment offered by Senator Ziegler, where they just certify or verify that they have insurance at the time. 6 of the positions in that fiscal note you're looking at were in regards to the providing proof at time of insurance. 9 of the positions in that fiscal note you're looking at now was for the the cancellation notices received from the insurance companies. Those positions, basically, when we receive that cancellation notice, we would be required to send out by certified mail notice of cancellation or suspension of the registration. If a person asks for a hearing for due process, we do have to offer that hearing. We would have to hold a hearing. And so 9 of those positions would be in regards to the hearings, the cancellations, the suspensions for Amendment Number 6. So that fiscal note includes not only Amendment 6, but also Amendment 1. And the amendments made today, that fiscal note is probably about what we've been looking at.
Already.
With the amendments that were made today, yes.
Without, clarify, we haven't adopted this last amendment. No.
With Amendment Number 6, if it is adopted, yes.
Okay, it has not been adopted yet. So
my error.
That's,
well, then how much?
Representative Gruenberg, then
Thank
Taylor.
You did this fiscal note on the original House Bill Number 44, Mr. Brown. Since then, in Labor and Commerce, they have amended this by adding Section 5, which would have increased the cost of registration by $1 a year. My recollection from when we increased this from $30 to $35, $5 across the board last year, and that was my amendment, was that a $5 increase would generate $2.5 million per year. And if you go on that figure, then you've got a $500,000 increase from the simple $1 per year increase. And this bill has an eightfold increase in revenue over the bill you have this fiscal note. So you should now have a positive fiscal note of somewhere in the neighborhood of $440,000 per year. Am I right?
Well, I don't think,
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Basically, we did a fiscal note for the committee substitute House Bill 44. It does show a revenue increase of approximately $416,000 per year for the fiscal year 89, which is the first full year it would be in effect.
I don't. The one I have shows nothing.
Nothing for revenue.
Well, look in your packet. The packet fiscal note for the CS is in your packet, and it's about a $400,000 a year revenue.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, basically what I was trying to explain is what the cost would be for the amendments that are proposed and adopted so far today. I did not address the revenue which is in our current fiscal.
Okay, could you give us a rough idea of the fiscal note on the amendment pending on the table right now is the notification of cancellation? I believe you referenced that 9 of the 15 positions that you were planning on were related to this activity here.
Mr. Chairman, it is 9 of the positions, so I'd roughly 400,000. That's a rough figure.
Representative Ulmer?
Just to clarify again, how much of this fiscal note relates to amendment number four versus 6, the one we did regarding certification. Is it your testimony that if we would accept the recommendation from former Senator Ziegler, that is, sign a sworn affidavit to the department verifying that language as opposed to certify and provide proof, that the rest of this fiscal note would also then disappear? In other words, that the 655,000 is for that amendment on page 1 and amendment number 6, and it all goes away, or what portion of it would go away?
Yeah, could you break it down into the two different amendments, I think?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I can't do that just sitting here, other than the 6 positions for the certification and the 9 positions for the cancellation notices. Roughly, again, 400,000 for the cancellation notices, roughly 250,000 for that.
So if certification is changed to accept the sign a sworn affidavit language, and if we fail to adopt amendment number 6, we don't have to add any of these positions. Is that your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, what we would add is one position, which we have on the current fiscal note.
Okay.
For the Labor and Commerce Committee Substitute.
Thank you.
But if I could follow that line of reasoning, then Section 5, where we raise the fees by $1 a position, could be, if you wanted to keep this bill revenue neutral, you could eliminate that too.
Yeah.
Or we could increase it by $10 a license and have it a revenue generator.
Yeah, we could
bill.
Do that. That's
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Donnelly?
The reason we put the dollar fee on, even with the one position, was because we took care of the $40,000 for the one position, plus we generated $200,000 for the state. If you just simply go with the amendments you've already adopted so far today, it still balances out about revenue neutral. And if you go with amendment number 6, then by doubling the fee, going to a $2 fee, you balance out revenue neutral or make a little money.
Representative Taylor.
What we're really talking about here is we've got ourselves a system right now where they keep track of the registration of vehicles. We've already got that there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel or do anything new. They have my name down and the license plates down that they issued to me on each vehicle that I own. All they're being asked to do is to put one additional bit of information into their little computer that holds all this, and that's the word insured or uninsured. And if it's uninsured, I don't even get into his computer. And that all that has to have is the number or proof that I give them verifying my policy. That's all we're talking of. And basically, the department is doing the same thing here to Mr. Donnelly's bill that I ran into with that safe boating bill. I come up with safe boating. All of a sudden, they want to buy 14 boats and hire about 40 people because they say, oh, I have to go out and enforce it, forgetting they've got fish and game officers all over the state right now doing the same thing. And I consider this gross when we're talking of adding 15 people to basically do the very same thing we're doing right now, and all we got to do is, I mean, I have to go in or send in title to my car, or they won't give me plates for it. I got a whole series of forms all made up. If I don't send the right information, if I lose the title, if I lose the registration, I got a whole series of forms they send back to me. You mean it's going to cost us $600,000 more for me to prove to them that I'm going to send them that I have an insurance policy? That's incredible.
400.
He's got 6 altogether.
No, that's for the other.
I'm 655,000.9 for sure.
Representative Ulmer?
Can I just go back to the reason why the amendment's being offered and just
can
ask?
Can I just make an announcement here?
Sure.
House Bill 46 is on the calendar. We had a late start today. And I'll tell you what my chair's intention is. A subcommittee made up of Representative Navarro, myself, and Representative Taylor are going to take that bill and work on it. And we're not going to really get to it today. We have 15 minutes left. So anybody who's here for that can leave. And we will make an announcement when we're going to work on that bill. So
we'll grind through it. It should be back on the committee calendar, I think, next Tuesday if we can squeeze it on the calendar. So, thanks for the patience. I'm sorry about that. We had a little matter on the floor, a little revenue-generating matter to take care of this morning that delayed us a few minutes.
I just wanted to ask the sponsor of the amendment to explain why he feels this is necessary.
I'll be happy to, Mr. Chairman. We have now provided in the bill that as a state, we want to know that people have insurance before we're going to allow them a set of plates to drive on our highways. And we could have trapped, or we could have nailed them at any point along this stream here. We could have done it on driver's licenses, and we decided for various reasons that'd be too cumbersome. The vehicle licensing registration appeared to be a good narrowing point or focus point where we could intervene and say, do you have insurance on your vehicle? That's why CHART and other groups support it so strongly, because of the number of uninsured people that are out there driving around. They're costing all of us a fortune, you know.
I agree with the mandatory, but I'm just curious.
Without having this notification provided by the insurance industry back to our state, every one of those people who acquired registration for those plates that has canceled or that has been canceled for some reason, and safe driving, the failure to get the right, I mean, getting too many tickets and speeding and these other things causes insurance companies to cancel people. I believe the state is entitled to have that information, since we relied upon a sworn statement that they had insurance to begin with to grant them the privilege to drive on the roads, that unless we have the follow-up information coming back from the companies that they've now been canceled, those people are going to be on our highways and operating for some period of time. In other words, we don't solve the problem.
Basically, it is, we do not trust the individual to tell us when his insurance has been canceled. We want an independent entity, basically, to let the state know that this has happened, so that we then, what do? Yank their registration?
Yank the plates, that's right. We send notice to them that their plates are no longer valid and turn them into the state. That also goes out to the police departments, and if in fact they pull them over, just like right now, if we do that on driver's licenses, as those points accumulate, we don't rely upon those people to voluntarily send their licenses in. We send a state trooper out and get the license. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just sorting through in my mind if there is some other way.
Yes.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Agreed.
Some other way that isn't quite so expensive to have the same result, and I'm just searching here.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
We do not have a complete fiscal note here.
Dave, you can join us over here. I don't think Representative Barr's going to make
The fiscal note we were given, were you given one of these?
The big one? No, I didn't get the big one.
John, can you
mark it?
I don't know if he made them for everybody or not, but what I'd like to do is have it made for everybody. What they're doing, they're estimating, I'm looking at the fiscal note dated 1/22, the 655.9, the big fiscal note.
Mm-hmm.
They're estimating that approximately 2,500 hearings will be requested annually as a result of the suspension notices. $1,000, and do you have other hearing officers, or is that the only one, sir?
That's the only one.
Okay. Well, for the hearing process itself, what facts do you rely on to estimate 2,500 hearings? And if there were 2,500 hearings, how could one person possibly hold 2,500 hearings in a year? That's roughly, if you consider 200 working days in a year, you're talking about
15
a day.
Mr. Chairman, basically, we don't feel that we could handle 25,000 or 2,500 hearings by one individual person. The experience that we have from the people that asked for hearings at this time, a percentage of those don't show up. We schedule more closer than what they can be handled because of the understanding that generally 25 to 30% do not show up for the hearings.
Okay, well, on what basis would a person need to have a hearing? Because it seems to me the only question is whether you have a valid insurance policy. And that's something that will take about 2 seconds. The person will either show a certified copy of the insurance policy or not. What do you need a hearing for?
Mr. Chairman, the hearings are required by statute any time we take away any privilege of the individual person.
I understand.
They must be recorded. Mm-hmm. They must be formal.
I understand that, sir. But the question isn't whether they're entitled to a hearing. The question is the issue with the hearing and how long that will take to decide. And it seems to me this is a very simple issue. The only issue is the hearing officer will ask the person one question. Do you have a proof of policy, that you have a current policy? And the person will either say yes or no. And if the person doesn't have it, it doesn't get a license. If they have it, they get their license. I don't see what takes any time at all.
Mr. Chairman, I wish it was that easy. We do have the hearings now under mandatory insurance. The only question really is where the insured at that time they were in the accident, or were they insured when they got the citation.
That's a different issue. The issue in this one is, do you have a current policy? And it seems to me that this is not accurate, with all due respect, that you don't need to spend this much money to enforce amendment.
Well, it doesn't also come in that it was a policy in force at the time the suspension was issued.
I don't think so, because what they're trying to do is to get the license back. Mm-hmm. And who cares what it was then? All they need to prove is, do you have a policy right now? It's irrelevant at the past that we're talking about right now, because that's when they're trying to get it back. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not.
Yeah,
it's different.
And that's something that should literally take 5 minutes.
It's like getting arrested for driving without a driver's license. The fact is, you didn't have one at the time, but if you show up in court with them, you show the judge one, he says, okay, go home.
There may be issues whether you were driving, et cetera, et cetera. There are other factual issues.
So I don't know. I think we
have two issues here. One is the policy. Should we be doing this? Uh-huh. Secondly, is the cost. And maybe they're related together. Maybe we don't want to do it if it costs too much. But to the policy issue, should we require the notification, Representative Taylor?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it speaks to the reason for the bill in the first place. For the whole bill, not just the little segments of it. Is there a reason for the state to be interfering in people's lives to the extent that we're going to require them to show us something beyond the fact that they have a title to the vehicle, that we're going to grant them a registration certificate? And the policy, I believe, is one that's gone on since statehood. This was actually argued at statehood, whether or not there should be mandatory insurance or not. And what this bill actually does is it firmly implants mandatory insurance requirements on all vehicles. It's the same policy decision that I believe the state of Hawaii made about 4 or 5 years ago. They run theirs through the same method, through vehicle plate registration. And I think it's a very worthwhile policy, to the extent that we have been imposing upon the public, through the manner in which we allow insurance carriers or require insurance carriers to offer policies, we've been requiring an uninsured motorist clause. And that be offered. I want to make that point. And as a consequence, the only reason any of that is there is because there continues always to be a small percentage of the public that causes a major percentage of the damage, and they do not have insurance or financial responsibility for their victims. And we as a state suffer a tremendous amount of cost because of those types of violators out there in the field, and I think this is a very effective and clean way of getting those people off of our roads and providing the good citizen with a benefit, in essence. Okay. Lower cost insurance alone.
I think we all understand the issue in front of us. We do dispute the cost. The department has its fiscal note in. We're having an attempt to write one. It's going to finance, if one way or the other. I'd like to leave that debate down the road. Maybe we could just have a vote on the policy issue, whether we should do it or not.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Gruenberg.
I am going to suggest, as part of this concept, I would like us to prepare our own fiscal note for this to go along. And I'm going to suggest that the fiscal note, roughly of 655.9, for the purposes of discussion, be cut in half, and we'll call it, for the purposes of discussion, 330,000. And if it's 330,000, and we add that to the latest fiscal note, what is the latest fiscal note there, David?
There you go.
If we do 330, and then we have I guess that would be an FY8 plus 17. That 330. I'm sorry.
I don't really mind doing that. I do have my understanding with the Finance Committee that they do the fiscal notes and we'll do the legal aspect.
We would send along what I would propose doing is sending along a fiscal note of 350,000, which would be only a negative 150,000 the first year. And it would be positive thereafter.
Positive after that.
That'd be positive after that. So I would ask that as part of the amendment, the cost be roughly, we send our fiscal note of 350 along.
Mr. Chairman.
Finance Committee's going to write whatever fiscal note they want to write. Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, if we do adopt Amendment Number 6, I'd like to see the fee portion just double to $2, increase them all $2, and that way there's no question that it's revenue positive still.
Okay, there's a motion on the table to,
and we don't have to worry at all.
We have amendment number 6, which is the notification of cancellation. An insurer shall notify the department within 10 days after the cancellation of a motor vehicle liability policy issued by the insurer within the preceding 6 months for a vehicle that is registered under this chapter. Okay, all those in favor of the motion? Grunberg, Taylor, and Barnes opposed. Holmer and Sund, motion passes. Amendment's adopted. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we send along a fiscal note of $350,000 for the cost. And that would be the cost of amendments 1 and the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Perhaps I could do like this. Could I just write a letter to the Finance Committee rather than going through out a fiscal note and justifying it that we feel the cost?
That would be my
less.
Motion if that's agreeable.
Okay, I'll do that. Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer Amendment Number 7, which would simply increase the fees to $5 more. So instead of 35, it would be 40. Instead of 40, it would be 41. 45.
45,
70, 75,
et cetera. Okay. The motion is to increase the fees on page 3 on line 20, 24, 25, 28, 29. Page 4,
revenue.
Line 4. 17, 19, 21, 22, to add $5 to the bracketed numbers.
Call it.
Question.
Question is, all those in favor of the motion? Ulmer, Grunberg, Taylor, Barnes, opposed, Sun. Passing on user.
Do you want a motion to move to?
Okay, is there any other amendments to come before the committee on this bill? Is that enough? Okay. If not, what I'd like is
you can move it. Go ahead, Robin. You like to go. Go ahead.
I move the committee substitute with individual rights.
Okay, motion to move committee substitute for House Bill 44 as amended.
As amended.
So with individual recommendations. And what the chair is going to do is I'll write a letter along on a fiscal note. I'm going to bring the CS back before the committee tomorrow that we can look at before I scoop it out. But if you want to sign the, is this the right one here?
I'd just like to thank the committee for taking so much time. I really appreciate it.
Do we have any more of your bills? Would you please stay away from
us? Now, come on now. We just made $2 million for the state if it passes.
We have another bill. But we're not going to bring it up.
Okay, if there's, on House Bill 46, I guess the point is subcommittee of Representative Navar, Sund, and Taylor. I'm going to let Navar chair it. It's his bill. It's a massive, not massive, it's a substantial.
Started off a 3-page bill, had it go to 30-some.
It's 30-some page insurance bill. I'd like for the three of us to get together, and I'll schedule to bring it back next Thursday. And just to announce to the committee, we have Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, Resource Committee has asked for this committee time on Wednesday. There's a substantial conflict. Representative Navar, Cotton, and I sit on that. I'm trying to find a way around it. I think we need to meet sometime Wednesday, but if not, we won't. Thursday, we'll meet. Friday, Representative Navar and I are in Anchorage at the medical liability insurance conference of some sort. We're making some presentation there. So it is possible next week we will only meet on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. But I'm going to try to get around the Wednesday thing. So that will adjourn.